Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Good morning, 710 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Here in Pensacola, everything is pretty much normal. We're going to get up to about 70 degrees today. But, of course, all eyes in the entire nation are focused on D.C. this morning, thinking about Wichita, Kansas, the families connected to the U.S. figure skating program, the Russian figure skaters, and the 60 people plus the crew, four, look like they have perished in this plane crash, where it ran into a Black Hawk helicopter being flown on a training mission by three members of the United States Army in D.C., and it looks like they are saying that, you know, everybody was killed, which is unfortunately awfully what we thought might be the case, and turns out that that's what they're saying, that they are in recovery now, not in rescue. Somebody who knows quite a bit about this terrain, this space, this concept, the former commanding officer of NAS Whiting Field, retired Navy Captain Matt Coughlin, who is now the director of the Pensacola International Airport, and himself was an H-60 pilot for the Navy, so flew this exact same platform, the Navy's version, just not the Army version. Matt, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir. I wish it were under better circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. A horrible day. Thanks, Andrew, for having me.
Of course. So I just wanted to, you know, look, I know that the investigation here is going to take a long time, but I wanted, first of all, just to ask you, you know, you've seen, I'm sure, this horrific video of what happened. You probably have been, you know, talking with people, and you certainly have thoughts. Anything you want to tell us, you know, from what you've observed so far about this incident that took place in D.C.?
Sure. Like any, you know, aviation mishap, we talk a lot about the Swiss cheese model. And when you line up all the holes in the Swiss cheese, those being either causal factors or contributing factors, and you can put a pencil through that cheese, they all line up, and then that results in a mishap. In this particular case, like every case, there's going to be a lot of different contributing factors to what happened. They'll go as far back. They'll look at pilot and air crew histories, you know, what they did for the last 36 hours. They will go so far in depth on investigating this. But at the end of the day, they'll come out with what the anomaly was and really what caused the accident. As for that area up there, you know, this is an out of the normal type operations up there. So something was amiss. Questions I would have, and these are probably helicopter perspective questions, is for the air crew, you know, were they wearing night vision goggles? Were they goggled up? Because that impacts, potentially impacts their visual sight in peripheral, and both in color and depth perception. Were they on goggles? What altitude were they cleared for? Were they flying the VF, what we call a visual flight route corridor? Did they exceed any of those parameters?
Can I pause you there for just a second, Matt? Just because I know it's a term that's it's such second nature to you, but for people who may not know, can you just explain to them the difference between flying, you know, visual flight versus instrument flight, or just explain that because that's a term that may become relevant here and it's useful for them to understand.
Sure. So there's basically two ways you fly, both either under instrument flight rules or visual flight rules. And visual flight rules are usually during what they call visual meteorological conditions, meaning the weather is good enough where you don't have to strictly fly off your instruments. It's all done visually. So I'm sure, you know, basically there's a VFR corridor, a visual flight rule corridor, through that area that the helicopter was probably flying through. And really, he was probably in contact with the tower. I don't know for the CRJ aircraft, whether they were instrument or visual. But the bottom line is weather conditions at the time were pretty clear. So they were both in and out of the cockpit visually. So how that impacted them, I don't know.
You were kind of in the middle of explaining some of the things you had thoughts about, and I kind of interrupted you just to make sure that was clear to folks. But You know, as you say, the everything's it's strange so far. One of the strange things about this is the fact that there's no obvious reason why this would happen, right? They're both, it's clear, they're both on normal flight patterns. You know, I assume they're both responding to the tower in the airspace. There's one air boss, you tell me if I'm wrong, that's going to be directing both the Army helicopter and the civilian flight, right?
Correct. At that point, so close to the airport, both, I'm sure, were talking to the air traffic control tower. You know, for the CRJ coming in, they get transferred over to the tower at a certain point, but I'm sure being that close, they were already cleared to land, so they were in communications with the tower, just like the helicopter.
You know, one of the things that I really wanted to have you on to talk about is because the immediate thing that I was thinking of is, you know, layman's perspective is that, you know, civilian flights, commercial air travel, and military are two very different worlds. But in a shared airspace, there's got to be a way to keep them interacting safely, which is something that we know a lot of, or you know a lot about, obviously, here in Pensacola. And I want to talk a little bit about that. Matt, hang on for me for just a second. Let's get a quick traffic on the fives from John Pickens.
Sure. That's right. No accidents to let you know about right now. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Back to Matt Coughlin, the airport director for Pensacola International Airport and also the former commanding officer at NES Whiting Field, and himself a Navy version of this same helicopter platform. In the Army, they call it a Black Hawk. In the Navy, they call it a Seahawk, or the Air Force, it's a Pavehawk. Like, everybody uses this platform. Talk to me a little bit about that question of how you keep the civilian and the military interacting safely, because we have so much of this, right? You know, you've got the trainers from NES Whiting Field. You got the trainers from NES Pensacola. You've got inbound and outbound transiting. I mean, we get helicopters all the time. Cobras and Seahawks come in all the time and go out, and, you know, F-18s and all kinds of stuff. How does that all work in one shared airspace?
Well, you bring up a great point. We do have very busy airspace here, given all the entities that fly around here. You know, Whiting themselves, the training wings up there, they do about 1.2 million operations a year, which is huge. So there is a lot of activity here. So how do you mitigate that? You do that through, for instance, we, the airport here at Pensacola, have a letter of agreement with the FAA in how they do their local operations here. To keep that all separated, at the end of the day, they're the ones controlling the airspace, and they're real good at it. And as long as they keep everything inside the parameters of the LOA, their procedures, everything's good to go. And just history would show it becomes a very safe environment and evolution for anyone that flies in and out of here. It is busy, but again, everything's looked at, everything's mitigated, and everything's committed to, policy and procedure. So we've been very fortunate. It doesn't go without risk. There's certainly risk out there, but we do everything in our power to mitigate that.
I assume, again, you tell me if I'm wrong, that the plane, for example, the plane wouldn't have the ability to talk to the helicopter. The helicopter, had they known the plane was coming, wouldn't necessarily have the ability to talk to the plane. They're talking through air traffic control all the time, right? And I also assume that the helicopter is able to communicate with, for example, Fort Bavoir, I think is the name of the fort that they came from. But they're having, conversations with more than just air traffic control. But you tell me, is that all basically right?
That's possible, but that's such a close location to the airport there. Everyone's on the same frequency.
Okay.
So they have that awareness. Now, they may not be talking directly to each other because that causes problems in itself. So
sure.
They are, like you said, talking through the tower, but it is a monitored frequency, and instructions are given on that frequency. But the leader, or the one in charge there, is the tower.
Would it be normal or abnormal for the helicopter to be operating with its exterior lights on in a situation like this, or can you even say? Because that was my first thought, is on a clear day, even if it's at night, and maybe especially at night, that helicopter should be super easy to see for the plane. But again, these are the thoughts a civilian has. What do you think?
Sure, and that'll all come out in the mishap report. But they, you know, the short video I saw, they did have some lights on. Now they'll have strobes, and so yeah, I mean,
oh, you're right from the video. That's right. Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And but it's entirely possible that the helicopter was positioned in such a way that the plane was coming at them from a visual blind spot behind or obscured by some equipment that, you know, there's a lot of helicopter between the pilot and a lot of space behind them. And so it's difficult to see, right? It's difficult to know. And even if they did see at the speeds of a helicopter versus an airplane, not much to be done, even if they saw something, right?
Well, you bring up a great point. I mean, there's an aspect there of which directions they were heading in and what their line of sight and their visibility was at the time. That's why I brought up the question of whether they were on goggles or not, because that can impact peripheral vision. And so what was their field of view and whatnot? And the big thing is, what altitude were they at? You know, they're cleared a certain altitude or parameter to fly at. What was the altitude of the because these are safety mitigations that are put in place, assigned altitudes. And so what were the altitudes of that aircraft coming in, and what was the altitude of the Hilo, and did either one of them exceed that?
One of the, and I know it's very early to speculate, but I was watching NBC this morning, and they had somebody on who thought that maybe, if you've seen the video, there's a plane in sort of front field of view in the top, and then there's the, in a little bit the distance, there's the 60, and then you, of course, see the other plane come in and you see the collision. He said that he thought maybe the helicopter was either directed to or working to avoid the plane that we're seeing close to us in the top, and that making sure they were clear of that one, maybe weren't focused on whatever else might be a threat in the vicinity. I don't know whether that's plausible or not, but I just figure in an airspace like this, there's so much going on that you kind of have to just put your life and your flight in the hands of the air traffic controller.
Yeah, I'd hate to speculate, but those, if you're, we're talking about the same one, the bright lights in the very beginning, kind of closest to the camera, those look like an aircraft that's actually departed, has already taken off and has departed in the area. And then what you see between the interaction between the landing aircraft and the helicopter, physically, if you look at a map, it's probably pretty far away. You know, that could be up to a mile or two away.
Okay, distances can be deceptive. Well, Matt Coughlin, I just wanted to give you sort of a last ability to comment on anything I didn't ask. Anything else you think about this incident, or, you know, maybe just kind of reassure people that, you know, this is stuff that you guys deal with all the time, and especially in this very busy, you know, sort of, you know, military and civilian airspace in Pensacola, what people should be thinking about, you know, airline safety in general.
Sure. I mean, it's a very, it could be complicated, but everything, like I said, the risks are mitigated. It's a very safe environment, just based on the history itself. We have a very safe record here, and so I think that's comforting to know. Also, I would put out for folks to think about the first responders up there, because that's some pretty arduous conditions that they're operating in, and trying to, you know, whether it's trying to recover or early on in the evolution, pull off some rescues. But that's a dangerous evolution in itself, so keep them in mind.
Absolutely.
Also.
Yeah, no, 300 people out there in those temperatures. Hey, John Pickens, who's kind of an aviation enthusiast, he's my producer, he wanted to ask a question. Do you know whether the Blackhawks have the TCAS, the traffic collision avoidance system on board? Do you know whether that's something that they use?
You know, that would be hard for me to speculate. I don't know what version of aircraft it is, and I'm not even familiar with the Army version. They all have their different suites of avionics, so hard to say or hard to speculate on that.
Sure, and that's kind of what I figured, because it's, you know, each one is a little bit different than, for example, the one you flew for the Navy. Matt Coughlin, thank you so much for the time. Thanks for doing what you do. Thanks for every day keeping air travel so safe here in Pensacola, you know, and with your vast experience on this. I really appreciate it, and thanks for giving me so much time this morning to help our folks kind of think about this and understand the situation, sir. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Andrew. Have a great day.
Absolutely. 725 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives.
That's right. Let's get back to, okay, computer freezing up. Okay, I-10, I-110 are looking good right now. There are no accidents to let you know about. If you're heading down Highway 29 toward 9 Mile going southbound, you are going to see some minor delays. Also, eastbound on 98 past the Navarre Beach Bridge, you're going to see some delays there also. Other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Did you know that with Pensacola Habitat for Humanity, home buyers can choose their location, floor plans, and even certain home features? It's true. With an affordable mortgage, you can build the home of your dreams, tailored to your needs and preferences, all depending on availability and qualifications. Don't wait. Start your journey to home ownership with Pensacola Habitat for Humanity today. Visit PensacolaHabitat.org to learn more and apply today.
Here's today's Strength for Life with your host, Pastor James C. Johnson.
Allow me to give you four get-along statements from Philippians chapter 2. Statement number one, have the same love. The Bible tells us to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love thy neighbor as thyself. Statement number two, obey the prohibition against strife and vainglory. Essentially, God says stop it. Statement number three, have a humble heart. The Bible calls it lowliness of mind. Statement number four, stop looking at how to help yourself and start looking at how to help others. If you'll practice these four principles in your workplace, in your marriage, or in any human relationships, you will find them to be four very effective get-along principles.
That was James C. Johnson. He serves as the pastor of North Stone Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. For more Strength for Life, please visit our website, strengthforlife.church.
Daniel will not stop crying. I've changed him, fed him, walked him around, and he's still crying. Now I'm panicking. What should I do?
It's okay. We're glad you called. We learned during the Period of Purple Crying program that babies tend to cry a lot in the first few months of life.
If nothing is working and you need a break, put the baby in a safe place and take a few minutes to walk away and calm down.
During the Period of Purple Crying, it is crucial to stay calm and never shake a baby. To learn more, visit PreventChildAbuseFL.org.
This message is sponsored by the Ounce of Prevention Fund of Florida, the State of Florida, Department of Health, and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WEAR-TV, News Radio Team, on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Now, whatever your name is, get ready for the big surprise. You are not you. You're me.
Good morning, 728 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
President Trump signing an executive order to prioritize federal funds for expanded school choice programs.
The move impacts several departments on a federal level and prioritizes school choice programs through discretionary grants. The order says that within 60 days, the Secretary of Education will provide clarity on how states can use federal formula funds to support K-12 educational choice initiatives. School choice provides vouchers allowing families to pick schools for their children. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
Thanks, Tammy. And Spirit Airlines has turned down a proposed merger with Frontier Airlines. Frontier's been trying to merge with Spirit since 2022. When the Denver-based company lost a bidding war with JetBlue.
There's bro date somebody else.
Right?
That girl's not interested.
And there's going to be more questioning today of President Trump's picks for key government positions. Cash Patel going before senators. He is selected to lead the FBI. Tulsi Gabbard will be questioned in her effort to become Director of National Intelligence. And day two of the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Questioning.
I gave up after an hour. I was so bored. I was expecting it to be really interesting. Like the Pete Hegseth, I was on the edge of my seat
right, the
whole time. The Robert Kennedy Jr. was like,
there were a couple of interesting spots, but yeah, most of it was.
Yeah, and you know me. I mean, I'm a nerd for this stuff. If I don't find it interesting,
then
nobody's
would.
Paying
yeah.
attention. Yeah.
Lowest C-SPAN ratings ever.
Down from 5 to 2 viewers. All right, David, thanks so much for the update. I appreciate that. Oh, you know, talking a little bit more about this issue of, you know, President Trump and all the things that he has been doing in the first, and it's hard to imagine, it's only been 10 days, but all of the stuff he's doing, and my analogy is it's like the invasion of Iraq. It's like shock and awe. It's just have a game plan where so much stuff is happening that the enemy literally has no idea what to do. They don't know where to start. They don't know what's coming next. It's a total chaos. And here's my new analogy, okay, from shock and awe. Or the Blitzkrieg, okay, which it is, okay. Here's my analogy. You get yourself into the Super Bowl, and you set on defense, and you're ready to go, and you suddenly discover that the opponent has 5 quarterbacks, 13 running backs, and 23 wide receivers, and they're playing with 7 footballs. Ah! What do I do?
This is a Fox News alert. I'm CJ Papa. It's now a recovery effort following a mid-air collision of a U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopter and an American Airlines jet moments from landing at Reagan National Airport in D.C. Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser.
Very sad we are for American Airlines, for the United States Department of Defense, and for all Americans for the loss of life.
Officials do not believe there are any survivors. American Airlines CEO Robert Isom.
We're absolutely heartbroken for the family and loved ones of the passengers and crew members, and also for those that were on the military aircraft.
Now, the airport expected to reopen at 11 a.m. Eastern. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy says the plane broke up into 3 sections, ending up in the icy Potomac River. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now it is 57 degrees in Pensacola. A box truck that belonged to a local seafood market reportedly crashed off a bridge and went into the water in New Orleans a couple days ago. That truck belongs to Maria's Seafood. Officials say it was picking up a load of oysters on Tuesday when it crashed into a flatbed truck and was launched over a guardrail off a bridge on I-10 into Lake Pontchartrain. St. Tammany Parish Fire says the truck driver suffered non-life-threatening injuries and was rescued by a fisherman. The box truck was pulled from the water later that night. Escambia County students will have a makeup day to offset at least one of the 4 snow days last week. Monday, February 17th, will now be a full instructional day for students. That day had been planned as a professional development day for only teachers and staff. All schools and offices are operating on a normal schedule that day, including transportation and food services for students. Well, the freeze on federal aid funding is temporarily halted, at least until early next week. But it did leave some questions this week about what would be affected if or when it takes effect. Pensacola city leaders said they were looking into what programs might be affected locally.
Yesterday, my number one focus was to understand what programs were under jeopardy within the next 24 to 48 hours. Because after spending 32 years in the federal government, I knew that this was going to eventually work itself out, that we would get clarity. It was unfortunate that the memo from OMB didn't really give the clarity that a lot of municipalities and counties and other organizations needed to understand what was going to get cut.
City Administrator Tim Kinsella, he says a lot of programs use federal money. One of those is Section 8 housing. Ultimately, HUD did release some further information saying Section 8 renters would not be affected by the potential freeze. He says some of the city's big projects that have received federal grant money also would likely not be affected as they're long term and they would have time to figure out the funding. 2 teenagers were hurt in a high-speed crash on the I-10 entrance ramp from Davis Highway yesterday morning. One of the 19-year-old victims was from New York, the other from California. FHP says the New York man was driving and crashed going around the curve at high speed. The car ran off the road and then hit a concrete wall. The driver was critically injured, the passenger seriously hurt. Governor Ron DeSantis is calling on lawmakers to do better when it comes to addressing illegal immigration. The governor holding a roundtable discussion, around the state yesterday. This is after the legislature passed an immigration bill called the Trump Act, which Governor DeSantis says is weaker than he would like it to be. DeSantis said it could actually weaken state immigration enforcement. A human smuggling bust in South Florida apparently has ties to Central Florida. Federal agents arrested 4 men in Miami-Dade County Tuesday. Court documents released yesterday show that those men were involved in trying to transport 26 illegal Chinese immigrants to Orlando. They were all taken to a Border Patrol station in Broward County. 735 at News Radio 92.3. John's got our traffic on the fives.
That's right. Brought to you by Executive Landscaping. Call them today for all your commercial and premium landscaping needs. I-10, I-110, seeing a little slowdown if you are traveling I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29. Just a little minor slowdown through that congestion. Also, if you're approaching 9 Mile southbound on Highway 29, you're going to see some delays there. Other than that, traffic's rolling smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
We are going to be looking at a cloudy day today with temperatures warming up near 70 degrees in the afternoon. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 63. Going into your Friday, showers and thunderstorms moving in through the morning and afternoon. 80% chance of rain. High near 72 on Friday. Friday evening, temperatures dropping near 48. On Saturday, partly cloudy skies with a high near 68 and a low near 48 degrees. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Cloudy right now in 59 in Pensacola and Gulf Breeze. 55 reported in Milton. Our next news at 8 and breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Legal provisions weighed on the bottom line at Germany's largest lender, Deutsche Bank, with litigation costs over the fourth quarter coming in at $617.5 million. Net profit attributable to shareholders hit $110.4 million over the period. The bank said it now targets a cost-income ratio of below 65% this year. Tesla's Bitcoin holdings led to a big pop in reported net income for the fourth quarter because of a new rule change in how companies account for digital assets. After showing a carrying value of $184 million in digital assets for the four prior quarters, the number suddenly jumped to just over $1 billion in the December period. SoftBank is in talks to invest up to $25 billion in OpenAI, which would make it the startup's top backer. That's according to CNBC. The deal, however, has not been finalized. Futures are mixed. Wednesday, the Dow Industrials lost 136. The NASDAQ down 101. That's your money now.
Start your year in a new Subaru from Anderson Subaru. 2024 Crosstrek model starting at $25,262. 2024 Forester Wilderness model starting at $36,222. And 2025 Outback model start at $28,868. Love is out there. Find it at Anderson Subaru. Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Hi, it's Bess Marks with Lazy Boy Home Furnishings and Decor. I want to read a little letter that I got from a wonderful friend. And she said, oh my gosh, wow, Bess, you and the Lazy Boy design team, you nailed it. We love it. We just can't believe it's ours. And that's what we call a standing ovation for our design team. Lazy Boy Home Furnishings and Decor, Mobile, Pensacola, and Spanish Fort. Just like a picture out of a magazine.
Ready for intelligent and thought-provoking conversation? Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Guy Benson, the brilliant and charismatic host, brings you a fresh perspective on the biggest stories of the day. Guy keeps you engaged and informed. Don't miss out on the intellectual thrill ride. Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola from 2 till 4 p.m. It's the show that'll challenge your thinking and leave you wanting more. On News Radio Pensacola.
How often does these drones have to be replaced?
That's a very good question because these are new technology drones that we'll be going to. The ones that we're replacing, I think we got maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, and then the new state law came out where we have very specific manufacturers that we have to use as far as vendors because of malware and things of that nature for security purposes when it comes to criminal justice agencies deploying these devices. Depending on how drones are used and battery life and things of that nature, it can last for a number of years, anywhere from, I would say, as technology advances, anywhere from 5 to 7 years. That would be my guesstimate right now based on drone technology, but it depends on battery life and other factors as well as, you know, environmental factors as well.
So that's Chief of Pensacola Police Eric Randall speaking with the Pensacola City Council meeting at their most recent meeting. talking about a funding grant for, I think it's about $75,000 from FDLE to replace the initial wave of drones that PPD had deployed. You know, technology evolves and technology wears out. You know, PPD was one of the very first users of body cameras. And, you know, I think we're now on like maybe our third wave of body cameras because you get in a fight and it takes its knocks, and the early ones weren't that great to begin with, and we had to upgrade. So joining us now, we have Pensacola Police Spokesperson, Public Information Officer Mike Wood. Mike, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So, what's the deal with the drones? Is it just because they're old? Are they Chinese and we're worried about malware, spyware? We're having to, upgrade and replace those. Is that right?
Yeah, to answer your question, it's all of the above. The technology advances pretty fast, and if everybody has a cell phone now and you can see it, you need to upgrade those as well sooner or later because the software just simply starts to outrun the hardware. And if you don't upgrade, then it's not going to work properly. And with something like a drone, we need to have the very best technology that there is, and the safety mechanisms on those vehicles that there is. So we want to make sure that they're safe as far as data that they collect. And that's what we're in the process of doing now, is upgrading all of those systems and the drone itself.
How many drones does PPD have? Do you know?
I believe it was two, if you count the one that was able to go inside of a building, three.
Okay.
But I don't know exactly, as far as numbers go, how many are getting replaced.
And then it was correct me if I'm wrong, I thought IHMC was the original partner for the first round of the initial drone or two. They built it for you. And are we still using them? Are we going through some other system? Am I right about that?
Yeah, they were initially with us. Now, as far as their involvement at this point, I would have to check on that.
Okay.
And get back with you. I'm not sure on that, but I do know that the drones were simply outdated, and they are in excess of 5 years old and needed to be replaced. So that's what we're in the process of doing now, looking at various vendors to get that done.
Okay. And then the other kind of, I mentioned it just in passing, but the body cameras, am I right? We're on is it third generation of body cameras at this point?
Yes, and it's the same thing with those. You know, the first set that we got were good. They were better than nothing, and the ones we have now are much tougher. They are more secure, and to be able to secure to the officer's body during a struggle, and also the information, the video and audio that they collect is saved in a much better way and transmitted to the servers in a much better way.
And for people who haven't been kind of listening to you and I talk over all the years that we have been talking. There's also the component of the software on the car and the software at home base and uploading and managing all of the data that comes off of them. And how, it's more than just having the camera, for example, or it's more than just having the drone. There's all of these, interconnected kind of web of issues that all have to be periodically upgraded. So very good. And again, the funding for this is coming from a grant. So, it's not coming out of city council. I guess your folks, your officers were involved in a rescue at a house fire. Is that right?
Yeah, that happened last Tuesday. There were officers on patrol in the area of Tarragona and Lloyd Street, and they heard an audible alarm. They started looking for that alarm, and officers Hughes and Dell noticed a house that was on fire. There were heavy black smoke coming from that home. There was one person outside that did get out, but quickly told them that there were people still inside. The officers made entry into that home and were able to alert the people that were in bed asleep to get them up and get them out of that house in time. And a short time later, that entire house was engulfed in flames.
Wow. So how many lives were saved?
Two.
Wow, that's fantastic. Quick response. Wow. And, response before it's a response, right? Like just, the information comes to them and they act, right?
Yeah, they were not called there. They were just in the neighborhood and they heard the audible alarm and were searching for that and found the house. So it was really very good timing and very fortunate for everybody involved. So we're just, you don't hear a lot of times the good things that officers do and it's just the bad stuff. But this is something that was wonderful and we're glad everybody's safe.
Yeah, very good. How did the PPD do during the storm? I know the city generally did quite well. Had the you were talking with Tim Kinsley yesterday about this, and you know, got the snow plows through Rhodes Inc. from Atlanta, and you know, there may have been an employee or two spreading some salt. bless their hearts.
In our defense, it's like getting Las Vegas ready for a hurricane. You know, there's just some things that you're not prepared for. But, you know, the city and the workers, they came together and they got the job done. There was a very – I don't know of anything that major incident that happened due to the weather. So folks stayed off the roads like they were asked to do, and that was the biggest part of it right there. We were able to answer our calls a little bit slower than normal, but – we were able to do that, and it was just it worked out very well.
You know, I was actually talking to a tow truck driver yesterday, and I'd asked him, you know, how did the storm go for you guys and your folks? And he's like, it was actually not very busy. We stayed off the roads when it was not safe, but most everybody else kind of avoided the roads, and that kept the problems down. And you know, everybody was smart. Everybody played well together, and we kind of, you know, got through it, which is, I mean, that's the good news. We're talking to Mike Wood, the public information officer for PPD. Mike, hang on for just a second. Let me get John Pickens in here with traffic on the fives.
No accidents to let you know about right now. Just seeing some minor slowdowns on I-10 eastbound as you head from Pine Forest through Highway 29 through that construction zone. Other than that, traffic's good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. All right, Mike, we always like to end with a did you know or a cop myth. And this is just the kind of thing that occurs to me, and I think you'll find it entertaining. Cops get called a bunch of different names. Most of them I can say on the radio. But I've always been curious to what degree these different terms are viewed by cops as a tone of disrespect or whether you don't mind at all. And we'll start with this one. Do you care about being called cops? I mean, is there anything negative about that, dishonoring about that, or less than, you know, instead of calling you police or officers, we call you a cop. Does that bother you guys at all?
No, we call each other that.
All right. How about fuzz?
It's okay.
Fuzz.
You know, that was, I think, back in the 70s, and I don't know if these newer officers have heard of that one before, but that one kind of makes me smile, but no, we don't mind that either.
All right. The man. Or the law.
Hey, yeah.
Johnny Law.
Yeah, well, again, that's unique.
I'm 80 years old, by the way, inside. Okay.
Yeah, we're good with that.
Okay. I got two more I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask you one. 5-0.
Don't mind that one at all.
Okay. And then this is the one that I would not call you because I do worry that this would be offensive. But the pig is a word that people use for cops, and I think typically when they don't like them. Does that bother you guys?
You know, I would have to ask all of us. And it's for somebody that speaks for the police department, I can't speak for what everybody thinks about, what each officer thinks about that.
Yeah.
Me personally, that doesn't bother me. I'm just personally not bothered by words like that or names, because a lot of times when somebody's talking or trying to talk down on us, they're talking down on that uniform and not the person inside of it.
Gotcha.
So we have to keep that all into perspective and deal with it. But like you said, we've been called many names much worse than pig, and on a daily basis sometimes, and we even brush those off as well. It's just another day at the office.
Yeah, I had somebody text in another cop friend who you know, and I won't name, but said his first day of working as this SRO, had a kid walk up to him right next to him, sniffed, and said, "I smell bacon." And knowing this person, I think he would probably fall out laughing at that.
Yeah, you know, when we hear things like that, it kind of makes it, again, it's just me, kind of makes me chuckle thinking that maybe I was insulted by that, when, you know, I'm just glad that I got their attention one way or the other.
There you go. I love it. Mike Wood, he is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, as always, thank you for the time, keeping us informed, doing what you do to keep us safe. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
All right. 7:49 here on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, you want somebody to guide you through that process, somebody who's good at it, and especially if you're doing it for the first time. You know, first time you do anything, it's always a little bit like you don't know what you're doing. It's going to be a hot mess and you're scared because, I mean, look, buying a home, the first time you buy a home, man, I remember it's been a while, but it's like, it's a big decision. I mean, this is, you feel like you're putting your whole life on the line. It's a lot of money. It's a long-term commitment. And, you know, what if everything's not right in the home? And, you know, what if it turns out there's some weirdo next door? Like, all the things that can go wrong go through your mind. And the funny thing is, when you're a first-time home buyer, you don't even know half the things that can go wrong. Like, you eventually live in enough place and you're like, oh, man, I should have been looking out for that and that and that, right? And that's why you want a great realtor, because a great realtor knows all that stuff and can help you think it through and analyze it and figure out what's the right answer for you. And I know, look, if I had had somebody like Christina Leavenworth, I mean, it was in Illinois, so it couldn't have been her, but if I had somebody like Christina Leavenworth help me with our first home purchase, oh, man, it would have been totally different. Because our realtor was, you know, well, we got the home, put it that way. But looking back, I think, man, there's a lot of things could have been done better. And that's what I know, is that folks who work with Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leaven Rinke Realty get that fantastic treatment. And if you are the first time especially, and you want to go straight to the, you know, experts that are going to help you and figure out all this stuff and really reassure you, because it's a very nerve-wracking experience to buy a home, especially for the first time, call her and talk to her. She'll take care of you. 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leaven Rinke Realty.
Sarah, Happy New Year. You look amazing. How are things with you and Mark?
Lisa, I can't thank you enough for telling me about Wave Men's Health. We've totally rediscovered each other. Mark's working out. Oh, and we're doing more as a family than laying around watching TV.
I told you, they're incredible. My husband and I had the same experience. It's like having that spark all over again, isn't it?
Exactly. It's more than the physical. It's the connection, the energy. It's the best gift we could have given ourselves.
This new year, make the resolution that changes it all. Wave Men's Health brings you proven options for ED, low testosterone, and enhancement. Reignite your drive, rebuild your confidence, and show up in the moments that matter most.
Here's to more love and more joy in the year ahead.
Cheers to that.
Book your appointment today at WaveMen'sHealth.com or dial 850-266-7020. That's WaveMen'sHealth.com or dial 850-266-7020. Wave Men's Health, making it happen.
Ladies, are you looking to make a big difference in the new year? I'm Martha Holden, president of Impact 100 Pensacola Bay Area, a woman's philanthropic group that has awarded over $17 million to nonprofit organizations in our community. Women 18 and older are invited to upcoming meet and mingle events, with March 1st as our membership deadline. For details, check us out on Facebook or visit impact100pensacola.org.
The cooler weather in Pensacola is a great time of the year for gardening. Whether it's planting roses, planting shrubs and trees in cool weather color, and of course, planning for spring. This is Mike Wiggins. If you've got gardening questions, we've got answers on the News Radio Garden Line every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesdays, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9.
Sponsored by Pensacola Hardware.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2, right after Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Do you know a Clarence Wally?
Yes.
Do you know where we can find him?
Yes, I do.
You know, of all the roles that Brad Pitt has ever played, Lloyd, the marijuana smoker in True Romance, is probably my favorite. It's that movie has got so many people who played the weirdest roles, like Gary Oldman. I just love it. And with you, yes, I do. Don't condescend me, man. 753 on News Radio 92.3. Just got done talking with the Popo, our good friend Mike Wood. That was my question to him, is do you like these nicknames or dislike any of these nicknames? And somebody texted that one in, and I didn't see it fast enough to ask him that one. I'm sure they probably laugh, you know. That's fine. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
It's always good to hear from Johnny Law. See?
Yeah, you got to ask these questions for the man. I did. I felt myself aging as I was asking the question.
You know, some of those nicknames may have been just a little
just
bit dated.
Slightly dated. Yeah. All right, fair enough.
More questioning happening today. President Trump's picks for key government positions. Cash Patel going before senators after being selected to lead the FBI. Tulsi Gabbard will be questioned as she goes about becoming the director of national intelligence, and day two of Robert F. Kennedy and his questions.
I will say this. Cash Patel has got one of the coolest names. Period.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you can't even argue it. It's just, What's your name? Cash Patel. All right, I'll go with you
now. That's a good
one.
That's a good one. Hamas is releasing hostages. The Palestinian militant group handed over a female Israeli soldier to the Red Cross after a ceremony in northern Gaza. And Meta has agreed to pay at least $25 million to settle a four-year-old lawsuit with President Trump over his suspended Facebook account. The lawsuit tied to them suspending his accounts after the Capitol riots in 2021.
All right. Thanks so much. I appreciate that. Oh, I got a funny note in. Somebody says the city administrator's last name is pronounced Kinsella. It's not, actually. But a lot of people think it is. There's actually, I've talked to him about this many times. Tim Kinsella, he's Irish, right? And in his own family, there's the differing pronunciations. But he says Kinsella is the one that he prefers. So it's kind of funny. I appreciate it. But I like that somebody texted me that. How many times have you heard me say this, John? If you disagree with me, text me. And if I've said something wrong, text me.
A lot.
Because I want to get it right. And even, look, I'm not from Florida. You know, we've lived here 11 years. I get most of the Florida pronunciations right, some of which I had to learn how to say them wrong the way we say them here. Come on. Cervantes, stop it. wrong, but that's how we say it.
That's how we say it.
That's how we say it. Okay?
That's how we
roll. That's fine. What was the...
Mobile? Mobile Highway.
Oh, no, there was one. It's a water thing, and all of a sudden I can't think of it. It's a bottled water place, and I was saying it so wrong. Anyway, so I actually appreciate that. I absolutely appreciate that. If you hear me say something and you think I've got it wrong, please text me. But that one in particular, it's funny that I kind of go out of my way to say that one the way he says it, just because that's... But I don't do it for DeSantis. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives.
That's right. If you're traveling on Highway 90 from Pace into Pensacola, right there, you're going to see about a 10-15 minute delay just due to congestion. Also, I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29 through that construction zone, seeing just a measly 5 minute delay associated with that one. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
All right, 437-1620, 437-1620. What was the other thing that I was going to tell you about? No, I'm not. John,
I didn't do it.
Just not going to do it. Not going to do it. Wouldn't be prudent.
At this juncture.
We've got this squabble going on between Governor DeSantis, or DeSantis, as the case may be, and the state legislature over immigration bills, right? Because he had a special session, and he wanted his bill, and a couple of other things as well. They ignored him. Well, they did the session, then they ended the session. And they said, we're not doing it your way. We're just going to do immigration. We're not going to do all this other stuff. And then we're going to do it our way. And now you've got this just white hot political war between DeSantis on the one hand and everybody in the legislature on the other hand, because he is saying what they're doing is, what was his expression? It's tantamount to making us a sanctuary state. Good Lord. Is that the level of rhetoric that we're at?
But it basically turns Florida into a sanctuary state. It will neuter interior enforcement. They're spending a lot of money on housing illegal aliens. I don't want to house them. I want to deport them. That's what we need to do. That's the mission. So they came out with this. It is not going to get the job done.
Meanwhile, they're saying his bill doesn't enhance punishments for crimes committed by illegal immigrants. His bill doesn't create a requirement for maximum sentences. It doesn't create RICO charges for groups who help illegal immigrants, which theirs does to cast ballots illegally. It doesn't expand ICE beds, as has been requested by the Trump administration. Actually, Alex Andrade, who's historically been very, on the governor's side, but he's very close to Danny Perez, the Speaker of the House, and he put out a thing yesterday that was, here's why DeSantis's measure is totally weak, and here's why ours is actually doing what the president wants. They're out-trumping each other. You know, who's really the Trump loyalist? The legislature actually called it the Trump Act. So far, as far as I can tell, all the Republicans are siding against DeSantis on this, probably because he, vetoed so many projects last year, and the current speaker and the president of the Senate said, I'm guessing, we can help you get your projects refunded or at least funded this year. So, figuring all of that out. So I don't know where this is going to land. They've passed the bill. They don't have veto override numbers yet unless they get Democrats on board. He's maybe threatening to veto the bill that he called a special session to create of sorts. So stay
Listen
tuned.
On air at night.